Bartolo News. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
What might an artist near the end of a well-lived life tell us about the creative process and the personal qualities or values they think are important for living a good life? Hi, I'm Bob Madar, inviting you to come on over to Local Folks Podcast for our last visit with Mickey and listen to him talk about what he has learned after 96 years on the planet. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, list of programs, podcasts, web only, and click on Local Folks.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, Joe talks to Eric Norbert, editor of the Selwood Bee, and takes your calls.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel in Portland. Bonds Over Borders is a benefit for Innovation Law Lab, a Portland-based organization that works to increase legal access for immigrants at detention centers, both locally and around the country. There will be live stand-up sets from Adam Passy and Dan Weber, and live music by Pedro Queriega. Again, that's Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel, 403 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information is available on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Hey, good morning, good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe is on vacation, and it's just me, but I have a guest, so that's really cool. It is, of course, Abe Proctor and me, Joe Uris, and we're going to talk about something really quite different. We're going to talk about neighborhood affairs. I stumbled upon something that I'm going to read you a little bit of the Oregonian about and then talk to the Bee's editor, Eric Norbert, about what he feels is happening and what I think I may agree with about the changes in neighborhood associations in an effort to disengage or limit the power of neighborhoods, the perceived, this is important, the perceived power of neighborhood associations. I need to first kind of tell people how the city government runs. And I'm going to sort of run.
A lot of people wonder about that.
Yeah. Well, it's important to understand. We are one of the few, as far as I know, the only large city that still has what is called the city council plan. It came out and was developed in Texas, in Galveston, after a hurricane. And they did a system which had at-large city council members. Now, many cities have city councils. Often they are simply, or not simply, legislative bodies representing different neighborhoods or different interest groups. Mm-hmm. Portland is unique in that we all elect all of our city council members, all four of them plus the mayor, at large. And this creates both an advantage in one sense, that is, everybody gets to know each other, but a disadvantage in that it essentially everybody gets to know each other. And I think it's an ironic situation.
Yeah.
No one neighborhood is necessarily better represented than another. But that brings us to our problem. Back in 2000 or so, was it? Well, quite a while ago, Tom McCall and others created a set of rules, a set of plans for the governance of the state. And among the ideas promulgated there was to create an empowerment for neighborhood associations, which had previously existed. And that was a role in which people who had a problem or had a need or wanted to change things could go before a neighborhood association rather than before the city council, which they also could do, to get a momentum going for a change. And this was a reasonably effective device. Neighborhood associations became a kind of standard or ritualized phenomenon in Portland.
Yeah, and the key to that really is the fact that the neighborhood associations are recognized by the city.
Right.
Because you could have them anyway. They could just be local beneficial groups.
Right.
But they couldn't accomplish anything at the city level. They could perhaps at the neighborhood level. But the city specifically has a system, has had a system, and still at this moment does have a system by which the neighborhood associations have a conduit into the city hall. They have no real power there, but they are heard from there.
Right, and it's a way for any citizen in any neighborhood, and let's be clear, every part of the city has a neighborhood
association. That's right, everybody's represented by one.
Yeah, and you can go to them, and through that organization, go to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement.
Well, the ONI, which doesn't exist anymore.
They're getting away.
Really. Yeah, it was the city's interface, the downline interface with the neighborhood associations. They provided some funds. There were grants available, and they paid for what are called coalitions,
mm-hmm.
which are central service organizations, nonprofits throughout the city, mm-hmm. that service a variety of neighborhood associations in their district.
Right, it's like Southeast Uplift.
Southeast Uplift is the one in the area where the B is located, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I just wanted to use that introduction because I think people, I'm not sure that people really understand how exactly the city runs or does not run.
Well, it's puzzling at times.
Well, and it's a very old-fashioned system. I would think that we would want to examine, we as a people here, some more representative system, which mm-hmm. would then, you know, represent more closely interests of specific areas of the city.
Yeah. It's been on the ballot a few times. Yeah, we've always defeated it, and I think the reason is that we like our city quirky. It's a quirky system, but we like the system, the city the way it is. It has a kind of a small town feel, and that's largely because of the neighborhood association system, which sort of creates 95 little communities in the city, villages that are the city.
Right.
It's sort of a collective village.
But, Eric, there's now a challenge to that.
That's right. If you do away with the neighborhood system, you've done away with the only representative system for the citizens
yeah.
of the city.
And I want to make clear, this system was part of the process that McCall and others created to give representation to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And
it works really well.
I think it does, but I'm going to read you from the Oregonian. All credit to the Oregonian, the August 11th edition. Help me. I don't know how to pronounce her name correctly. Udaly?
I think it must be Udaly.
It must be Udaly.
Yeah, that isn't the way I've been saying it, but I've been told I'm wrong.
And I'm sure
I used to call her Udaly.
No, it's Udaly. I'm perfectly sure. Now, I do not know the.
I don't know her either. I probably would have known how to pronounce her name.
And I apologize to her.
We apologize too at the B.
Okay. The Portland Commissioner, Chloe Udaly, has acknowledged acknowledged a bureau under her control badly mishandled efforts to change the rules regarding neighborhood associations by failing to consult and involve the groups. Newly released emails indicate. I'm not going to read the whole of this article, but what basically seems to have happened is there was a disconnect, to put this kindly, between what was going on with the neighborhood associations and their perception of their powers and interests and the city. And she created,
well, particularly at her level. Yeah,
right.
I mean, she didn't like the system at all.
Right.
She made that clear. She says she identifies with renters. I assume that means she's a renter, because she says she doesn't know which neighborhood she lives in. And you would know if you owned a property in it, probably, because then you start getting interested in the specific area you live in.
Well, this goes to the heart of a whole whole set of issues, and it's part of the reason why I'm interested in this. And
mm-hmm.
and your articles in the B, plus your editorial in the B, excited me, and I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about what your perceptions are.
Okay.
And I also wanted to explain things to people, because it does seem to me that something's going on sub rosa.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not really being...
And it is a little disingenuous of Ms. Udaly to start out in the quote here in that you just read, saying that that was mishandled in her department by not involving the neighborhood associations, because the neighborhood associations haven't been involved since she started this crusade a year ago, and she certainly knew that. I mean, if she felt they weren't being involved, she could have visited a few and involved them, but I don't think she did that.
Now, there is irony in the reorganization, because essentially the documents that I was given by city people, who were very helpful, indicate neighborhood associations would continue on.
Well, they can. I mean, she's not abolishing them. She just wants to take away any power they have of communicating the neighborhoods think to the city hall.
Now, part of this issue is the phenomenon of NIMBY,
Not
in my backyard. Mm-hmm. Which is essentially a criticism which assumes that people who own property, own a house on a 50 by 100 foot lot, or even are renters, are protective of their area, of their turf, and don't want anything else to come in which would crowd out or make less comfortable where they live.
Well, you know, you're dealing with human nature, but I would, based on my own experience, because I'm also on a neighborhood association, people tend to be a little bit more less, not in my backyard, than she would seemingly give them credit for. I mean, if you volunteer to be on a neighborhood association board, and it's a volunteer position, you get not a penny out of it, you're oriented towards public service anyway. That was why I got involved. I live here. I'd like to be involved in it, and I have volunteered my time for many years.
Uh-huh.
That's really what got me the job as the editor of the Bee, because I was actually on the Neighborhood Association, and when the Bee was purchased, they knew that I lived in the neighborhood, knew something about it, and could write, because I had been writing the newsletter for it. I think they were surprised to discover I actually had any news background. But
well, what has happened so far is that essentially it almost is a done deal.
Well, it almost was a done deal.
Right.
At the time I wrote the editorial and reported it, it was announced that the final vote would be less than a month away at city council.
Mm-hmm.
And doom was in our future in the neighborhood associations.
Well, so there was going to be an office of neighborhood involvement.
Well, that's what it was.
Uh-huh.
They renamed it. It's now the Office of Community and Civic Life.
That's a thing?
That's the same organization with neighborhoods removed.
Okay, I see.
And also the entire staff, as I understand it. I believe we have a new staff that is more or less committed to the idea of not having neighborhoods as representatives of the people.
Right. And I think this is really, it's really an odd and I have to say clumsy effort to change the system. There is the perception, which is apparently by this particular city council member, very strong, that the neighborhood associations cannot or do not or will not represent the interests of everybody in a neighborhood.
And that's really kind of ridiculous if she had actually read the bylaws.
Uh-huh.
Because the city, through the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, made sure that all the neighborhood associations had adopted bylaws which were representative of the city goals and values. And if in fact there is a neighborhood association somewhere that isn't following its own bylaws, the city had a way of dealing with that.
So what we really need to do is think about this in terms of the larger question in Oregon. There is a very strong movement now to densify the city,
mm-hmm.
in fact, densify the state.
And in fact, our neighborhood association has been involved in that and in trying to find a way to cooperate with that goal without destroying the neighborhood.
Now, the rationale for densification, a public rationale, is that there are many people who are poor, who cannot afford rentals. Rentals are very high in this city, considering. Cannot afford rentals, cannot buy land, cannot buy houses, In fact, there is obviously a very real problem of homeless people, and all of this needs to be dealt with. The irony is that any set-asides or any developments which offer housing to middle-class people who otherwise couldn't afford it don't really deal with the poor. The situation of poor people is exacerbated by the fact that we have not ever since World War II developed adequate housing for poor people specifically. Mm-hmm. And there's been discussions of this, and there is some public housing, but there is not, in fact, the kind of pattern that we saw in the East Coast, particularly New York and Boston, where vast amounts of housing were built and set aside for poorer people.
Yeah, well, we have some of that.
But not a lot.
And it's hard to say how much is needed, but we have some of it in our own neighborhood.
Right. Well, one of the things that is clear, and I'm, I think, legitimately concerned about it, is that we have a vast population of people who are homeless.
Yeah, that's an entirely separate issue. I've done an editorial on that, too.
Well, I'm not sure that it's entirely a separate issue. I think there is a problem housing.
Yeah, but it has to be addressed separately, I think. And I can go into that and why and tell you what I said in my my editorial. But that really takes us sort of off the subject. If you want me to do that, I'll do it.
Well, I think I do want you to talk a little bit about your editorial, but what I want to talk about right now is not only the process, which seems to have been derailed to some degree in the course of things at City Council, and the fact of the matter is there is this undercurrent of resentment and assumption about various neighborhoods. For example, the Irvington neighborhood, which happens to be very dense, actually, lots and lots of people.
There's a lot of density in all parts of the city. Really.
And the accusation is, well, this is an area of single-family homes, and it's all very luxurious, and nobody can get in, and so on. Yes, real estate prices in Portland are incredibly high.
Mm-hmm. And that's partly because of our urban growth boundary.
Right. Now, that's where I was going. As a matter of fact, what we did in the interest of preserving wildlands and farmlands was to create a system which would limit urban growth, and the surrounding area, in a European style, would be farmland and open land and wildland.
And it contributes to our quality of life. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses to all of this. One of the reasons we love Oregon here is that we can drive out of the city and you're right away in the countryside.
Well, in fact, we have one of the largest urban parks in the world.
And we got more urban parks than any other city in the world, too. And so also the largest one and the smallest one.
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of things that the urban growth boundary did accomplish. What it did not accomplish is understand if you make land for building homes, particularly homes for working class and poorer people, then you're setting up a situation where inevitably that scarcity of properties, that scarcity of homes, is going to drive the market up.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. And the actual reason given by the city for the densification is not having to do with affordability specifically.
No, not
it's
at all.
It's to accommodate future growth. They've got projections as to how many people want to come and live here because we like it so much, and they want to make sure there's places for all those people to be when they get here. And so all of the neighborhoods have been invited to do density planning. Back in the 90s, we did it in the Selwyn and Westmoreland area, and we did quite a bit of density planning. In fact, and this kind of goes to the point about not in my backyard and how that not necessarily is the case. Uh-huh. I was on the board which approved a densification in my own block that went allowed apartment houses.
Right.
Not that I wanted apartment houses next to my house, but it seemed like a reasonable way to do it. And that was also partly because TriMet had come to us and said, we're going to build a light rail line. We're going to have a station in North Westmoreland, and we want to have a lot of apartment housing there to accommodate the people who will ride the train. And so we cooperated, and then they canceled the station. So at this moment, we have a rather strange arrangement in a situation in North Westmoreland where the train goes right by us. We're a mile from the station in both directions. It's the longest gap in Multnomah County on the Orange Line, but they also canceled all our direct downtown buses except one, and that one has to take the Ross Island Bridge. So transit has really gotten rotten since they opened the MAX line in our area, but they still are building those apartment houses there, and those people are going to have cars because transit is not very
good.
Right,
and then this brings up a whole host of issues about quality of life and health and a lot of other issues. But most importantly, and I think this really is at the heart of this, is the fact that the planning process in this city seems very weak. For example, I'm just going to throw something out here. Mm-hmm. When TriMet originally planned to put in the MAX trains, mm-hmm. some people argued reasonably that you had to spend the money to build a subway from, say, Lloyd Center to past downtown. Otherwise, you couldn't have long enough trains, and you couldn't move them quickly enough to take people from the east side all the way over to the far west side, where most of the industrial development, the modern technology industries, are developing. And that was sort of pushed aside. So we don't have a rational system of growth. We really don't. Mm-hmm. Now, on the other hand, we have an enormous pressure to develop and to densify, with a great accusation being made, I would say by Udaly and others, who are saying, "Oh, you're all NIMBYs. You don't want growth. You don't want apartment houses."
Actually, we've cooperated with it all the way along the line.
Well, that's important. I'm gonna ask you to go to your editorial shortly, but I just wanted to set this up. This is not a fantasy. This is not a reactive response to things. This is really looking at a whole host of problems that have not been solved in any way by either the state or the local government. Now, I want to give people a chance to call in. I think I've set this up enough so that people can follow the argument. I don't know.
We'll see.
Okay, so let's go out there, 231-8187. John, you're on the air.
All right, am I speaking with you?
You are.
Very good. Well, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I'll do this just in quick two parts here.
Good idea.
First part, neighborhood association, sounds like a good idea, but if you get the neighborhood association in a stranglehold by one group for any amount of time, and they are the ones who can communicate with the city officially, then anyone that doesn't share their point of view doesn't make it into the scene.
Oh, so I disagree with that completely.
Wait a minute. So the key would be to have neighborhood associations and strong ones, but not have them be official. I think that's wrong, essentially. That's the answer. Okay, the other thing is, you gentlemen should be ashamed of yourselves. If Abe was there, he wouldn't let you do this.
If who was there? I'm sorry.
If Abe was there, he would not let you pick on Chloe Udaly like you have been.
Oh, I don't think...
Well, she's the commissioner in charge of all this.
Yeah, let's be clear. She's a public official. She is responsible.
You are trying to convince me and the rest of the audience that she does not have our best interest at heart.
I haven't got that in my head at all.
The exact opposite is true. And you may not know that she is a former business owner, bookstore, deep thinker, highly intelligent, and not afraid, you know, of you or the other crusty old farts that don't like her.
I don't dislike her, sir. I've never met her. She's never met me.
That's what I point. You never met her. Don't talk about her.
Wait a minute. John, listen.
You've never met me, but you're talking about me.
John, really, we're talking about a public official who was elected by the people, who was supposed to represent the people. That's a different standard than private citizen.
Look at the way you're talking about her. You can talk about any public official all you want to, but not in a personal manner.
Wait a minute. What's personal here? We're talking about policy. Why do you see it as personal?
Well,
I'm really curious.
You're putting yourself in her head and saying, well, she's saying all this and all that, and you're painting her as your enemy.
Well, we are actually relying on what she said.
Yeah, I quoted the Oregonian. The Oregonian's article.
Your biases stand out glaringly as you speak. I'm just telling you, you know, it's not like I'm God and I'm going to come down on you or anything, but...
Well, I'm glad of that.
But I don't think you're doing yourself any good by being so harsh on one person when the whole, and in your analysis of the cause, to skip back, of the housing problem, it's nothing to do with anything like politics. It's just plain old corruption and greed, and speculation is the cause.
Okay, at this point,
anything else.
At this point,
okay,
John, listen to me. At this point, I think you made your point. I'm going to let you go. Give some other people an opportunity. Okay, taking a pause here. John's obviously a defender of the councilwoman.
Well, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah, that's fine.
As a person, but we're talking about her policy as a commissioner.
Yeah, I don't know the woman.
Either, and I don't harbor any ill will towards her. I like bookstores.
But okay, we're getting really off the subject here.
But we're talking about what she's done at the city hall level, and that's the subject.
Right, and I want to be clear about this. I came into this a little bit concerned because I felt like there was an effort to disengage the neighborhood associations from their official role, as described initially mm-hmm. way back when.
And the caller seemed to think that was a good idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I think that there's a misunderstanding. Yes, you can and you should go to your neighborhood association with a neighborhood problem, but also you can and you should be willing to go to city council. There's a time for individual testimony at the beginning of every council meeting. This is a process which is fairly open, but again, it is a bureaucratic system. And that bureaucracy runs on and on.
And that's a pretty limited opportunity. I mean, there's not too many people who can take advantage of it.
Or have the skill to handle it.
Have the skill to do it, or can make the trip downtown to do it.
But one of the things that has disturbed me about this is that there's a suggestion that minorities specifically are removed from or disengaged from ability to use neighborhood associations. I have not seen that.
No, in fact, the bylaws...
Well, it may be true. I just don't see it.
The bylaws of all of them, which the city has dictated, essentially, exclude doing anything discriminatory. And I can say from my own experience on our neighborhood association that we do everything possible to involve everybody who is living in our neighborhood.
Well, be that as it may, I think that's true. But I think more importantly, if I were to try to create greater democracy within the existing system, I would want to develop a training program and a participatory program to show people how to use the system rather than to alter the system to meet some non-established need. I'm very concerned that what this really does is disengage the power of local groups, of neighborhood groups.
Yeah.
And that worries me. But let's go to the phones again.
Okay.
231-8187. Lou, you're on the air.
Mark.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Lou is second.
Hey,
Mark is on hold.
Okay, Mark, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, you there?
I'm here.
Go on.
Just a question about, maybe this is not exactly on topic, but you guys brought it up, the housing shortage and the fact that we have our urban growth boundary that keeps, you know, the urban inside, and there's limited space, and so the price of housing is going up.
Well, that's part of the reason.
Now, part of the reason.
Yeah.
Now, what about, I haven't heard anyone talk about moving the urban growth boundary out a little bit to relieve the pressure.
Oh, there's a lot of talk about that all the time.
It doesn't happen.
Well,
but you're right.
I haven't heard it this morning.
There is not an effort to do that that's powerful.
The Metro is controlling that.
Yeah.
It's not the city of Portland.
Yeah.
And they do expand it from time
to
time.
Leverage.
Pardon me?
The city has no leverage with the county on that, or
well, yeah. It's not the county; it's Metro.
Yeah,
Metro
yeah,
is a regional government.
Remember that we have several layers of government, and Metro is actually the body that makes decisions about that particular phenomenon.
Interesting.
Yeah,
and they own the zoo too.
Yeah, you want to go see a giraffe? You'll have to deal with them. Listen, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. So really, if there is a body which needs to respond to the pressure to expand the urban growth boundary, and I'm not sure how I feel about that, it's irrelevant to this particular conversation at this time, but if that's your concern, it's Metro that needs to be addressed. And I have to say that Metro is its own bureaucracy with its own set of rules and its own set of traditions. And in fact, the program from which I got a PhD, the Urban Studies program at Portland State, has produced a lot of people who are predominantly involved in organizations like Metro. That's not to cast aspersions. It's just a fact. But let's go on to other callers. I want to get some callers out of the way. I made a mistake. I think Mitch is on.
Now. No, Lou is next.
He's Lou.
He keeps changing the screen on you.
Yes, he does.
Read the top one.
Okay, Lou, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Okay, so... Joe, I would just say, I've been involved. I've been elected in the past to a DNA, Downtown Neighborhood Association.
Uh-huh.
We've, out of Portland State, your school, worked quite a bit on this particular issue. I do have biases. I donated $7 to Chloe's campaign. I've always supported Chloe and Joanne and Amanda. So I guess I have a couple of questions. And Joe, you've got, I've been a co-host or a guest host, so you've got that 30-second delay thing. If you feel like I'm getting past what you want to talk about, just cut it. But there are four of us who came to KBOO a week ago Thursday, and we were scheduled to talk about this issue from the other side, four in support of the change. And there's a person who came in who said right like 30 seconds before the program, it was Thursday morning, it would have been live talk radio for an hour about why the code change is a good idea. And we were told, well, we're not doing that program. So the four of us stayed and talked outside at the table for an hour instead of being on the air.
Well, I know nothing about that. Okay.
Yeah, but my suggestion here with KBOO, and you're a KBOO volunteer, is that you might want to have the panel of four of us that we came come and talk on your program, Joe, and give an alternate view. So that would be my one suggestion. Did you have other things you wanted to mention for now?
No, listen, is your complaint, therefore, that you guys got canceled out of a scheduled program?
We were scheduled to be on, and then we were told not to.
Yeah, so I don't know anything about that. So.
I guess I have a question for your guest. It sounds like Eric is the publisher or the editor or both.
I'm the editor. I'm not the publisher. I am, however, the entire staff.
But is it owned by the Tribune?
We're owned by the Pamplin Media Group.
That's Tribune, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the Tribune. Okay.
So my question for you, having dealt with, for 7 years, going to meetings of neighborhood associations and Mark with Northwest and ONI when it was ONI, before it became Civic Life, do you know specifically some of the people who are also pushing your position, which would be Eric Fruits, Felicia Williams, and Alan Klassen, another newspaper editor?
Well, listen.
No, I don't think I do.
I have to caution you. You're naming people who don't have a chance to respond necessarily.
Just like we did not have a chance to respond when KBOO decided to cancel that program.
Well, that's
and
irrelevant.
You're welcome to cut us off now. Bye.
Well, what happened there?
I believe he hung up on us for some reason.
Well, he hung up.
Okay. Yeah. Well, those names he mentioned, I don't recognize.
Well, I'm very nervous about attacks on individuals who are not generally understood to be public figures, and mm-hmm. I don't want to commit some kind of offense, either in a civil sense or in a legal sense.
Well, I don't even know where he was going with
that.
Yeah,
I don't have no idea what his trip was.
But I don't know those
but
people.
But I'm out of phase here. Let's go to Mitch. I believe you're next. 231-8187. Mitch, you're on the air.
Yeah, I don't know who the previous caller is either. I'm familiar with that position that opposes you and Eric's position. And
yeah.
Having been a journalist 20 years ago for the San Francisco Bay Guardian and the SF Weekly, their competitor, I know journalism has changed in the last 20 years.
Boy, I'll say.
When the previous caller mentions Alan Klassen, and your guest, who edits a different city newspaper, doesn't know who Alan Klassen is.
I think I didn't catch all the names. I think I do know. I never met him, but I think he runs the, isn't it the Northeast Examiner?
The
Northwest Examiner.
Yeah, it's a good paper,
and
by
in fact, he's been very involved because the Northwest neighborhood has had one of the most involved neighborhood groups that helped stop the polluting of the ESCO plant for many years.
Yes,
and
that's true.
Actually, when the Oregon DEQ would not do air quality testing. They went ahead, and your guest Eric was right. No one on the board gets paid, or no one belonging to a neighborhood committee group gets paid. They raise their own money to get an independent air quality tester in, and communicated with the entire neighborhood, both renters and homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
Now my question to your guest is, goes back to journalistic qualities changing over the last 20 years. When we were a journalist, the first thing that caught me was when you opened the show, you didn't know how to pronounce the city councilor's name. When she ran for office, like Alan Dawson, did you not call her to request an interview to find out what her
positions were? We are a monthly newspaper serving a small section of Southeast Portland. And to succeed as a newspaper, it is necessary for us to, and particularly because I'm the only full-time staff member, it's necessary for us to concentrate entirely on the section we serve. So if it happens downtown in City Hall, we don't cover it. It's 2 miles outside of our coverage.
Well, and I have to say something here. I don't feel like the question of the pronunciation of Udaly, is that correct, Udaly? I don't feel like that's a very significant argument, man.
How about the fact that your guest has written editorials without trying to speak to Ms. Udaly and get her?
Well, you'd have to read the editorial. The editorial was not against her at all.
No. The editorial, what you said on the air is you oppose what she did. I may oppose what she did, too, since I
raised questions about it. I'm not
an editor of the newspaper. You don't know how to pronounce somebody's name. You're writing editorials about the position she's espousing. Why not call her up and talk to her?
The issue was what the effect would be of what is proposed, period. It isn't about her at all.
But if she's the political lever that the people who support the movement against neighborhood groups are mounting an attack against, and you seem to be part of that group, why not simply speak to the political lever?
You mean your criticism is of our guest because he didn't talk to our city commissioner? Is that in the essence of your criticism?
Well, he has gone on the air with you, Joe, and said he's written pieces about these issues.
I wrote an editorial.
One was on homelessness, which he cordoned off.
I did a separate editorial on that. I could discuss that separately.
But then for him to say, you know, the both of you to agree in a kind of chorus that renters are second class citizens in neighborhoods.
No, wait a minute.
I was
a
renter myself.
This is not valid. I have never in this conversation suggested a class structure of renters versus homeowners, nor do I suggest that homeowners or renters ought to be categorized separately. This is an issue for neighborhoods.
I might mention that on our neighborhood association, the 12-person board, 3 of them are renters, and 1 of them is the president.
Yeah, I don't think what I'm picking up here is again the notion that we're somehow biased in favor of a particular class of house occupant. I don't think that's true.
No,
I don't even think bias is the angle of my call. The angle of my call is that you're not serious. Because if you were serious, you'd have someone who opposes Eric's view on your program to discuss it, and if you were serious, you'd have someone like Alan Clausen, who is knowledgeable on these issues in depth and who has been actively engaged in following it and often putting his own money into it, because he's not backed by Pamplin Papers, which owns the business advertising in Portland. He actually, you know, occasionally dips into his pocket and hires reporters to go out and dig further.
We hire all our reporters are freelancers. But we have 4 freelancers.
But we
cover what
Alan
happens in
the
our
point
area.
Here is the knowledge of the issue, the fairness of the discussion of different views being presented. And Joe, with all due respect, if you go back and listen to the audio archive tonight when you've had a few hours separate and listen to your opening introduction of this program with Eric here, you will hear the kind of tone that I'm reacting to, and you will also hear how your complaint about journalistic principles is somewhat hypocritical, because you have not put people at that table. Now, people who are not at the table are on the menu. Anybody involved in politics knows that, whether you speak French or not. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that is exactly what's going on here, and what is coming out over KABU's air. And your previous caller, who I don't know, who tried to gain access at KABU, wouldn't be the first to say that not only are certain viewpoints not sought, but direct communications with politicians are not sought. And it's ironic, because Joanne Hardesty, who was on Democracy Now! This morning, started out as a KABU broadcaster before she ran for the city council and has been so terrific on it.
Why? How is that ironic? I'm sorry.
It's ironic because there was no reaching out prior to Joanne being on the city council to getting either Mayor Hales or other mayors. When I asked your press critic at KABU, Teresa Mitchell, why she didn't reach out, she said, it's no use talking to those people. The other newspapers talk to them, and it's just no use talking to them. So, and she's the press critic at KABU.
So I don't know. There's no such structural position, press critic. That's number one. Number two, we are volunteers, as you know, and we are presenting opinion. This is definitely an opinion show. We are basing it in fact. I would like to know if there's a reason why you think what we're saying is unfair. Never mind the pronunciation of a name. Never mind a bias that you clearly see. Is there something I am saying, or my guest is saying, that is untrue?
I think you need... I am not, again, I said that I am not as steeped in the issue of this opposition to neighborhood groups. I came up volunteering with the Northwest Neighborhood Group years ago when they took on ESCO and won.
Which was a good thing.
Health and property values in that neighborhood, they won. And it was against my interest, because I was unemployed at the time looking for work, and ESCO was one of the few local employers paying a sustainable wage.
But you're not dealing with the question I asked. Is there something we have said that you find to be untrue? Biased? Yes, we are. Is it untrue?
Yes, I think it is untrue.
In what way?
I
really want to know, where are we being untrue?
When you will have to listen to the opening of the program, where you demeaned renters and you privileged the property owners in terms of making policy in neighborhoods, you talked about NIMBYism, and you set the stage for the kind of talk that usually sets the property owners' rights up against the larger community rights that don't involve a personal investment, that involve simply trying to survive. And you have agreed to cordon homelessness off as if 45 years of wage stagnation has nothing to do with homelessness, and that's a part of NIMBYism too. The fact that the professional class hasn't opened up their mouth for the people that are not represented, even if they're union represented. I'm a member of UFCW, and they negotiated a contract with Fred Meyer and Kroger's for us that's minimum wage plus 20 cents, and that's a union job. And KABU has never, well, I won't say never, because Jamie Partridge has done some programs as critical of certain unions in town where the fat cats run the show and the wage
slaves
the point is, wage slaves have no voice, and you don't have Alan Clausen at the table to talk with Eric, because Alan is more knowledgeable, and Eric would come off sounding as shallow as I do, because I'm as uninformed as I'd need to be a guest at your table. Right.
Okay,
now.
I appreciate the criticism. I'm going to let you go. There are a lot of other people waiting in line. I also have to say, what I read at the beginning was an article in the Oregonian.
Yeah, you were reading.
You know, that was all I was doing. So. All right, let's go on to the next caller, 231-8187. Ross, you're on the air.
Well, congratulations to both of you. You got to be, you're doing a wonderful thing to do this talk show, and I hope it would be in the spirit of opening a very important area of conversation as opposed to closing it, and I'm going to guess that's what it's going to be.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I have to say, I'm I have not understood this change. I have understood reasons for people wanting to change, because, you know, it's been sitting around, and, you know, neighborhood associations, so much more is often expected of them. But they really are very different, and it all depends on who shows up at the table. And it's a table that doesn't give much rewards, because the neighborhood associations, in some real sense, don't have much real power. They don't have much in real resources. And so it could be that that's why people don't, they're not representative, because why would you waste your time at a neighborhood association meeting unless maybe you like to make friends? Or maybe you own real estate and you want to know what's going on in your neighborhood, or maybe you're retired.
Well, as it stands right now, the city, you at least have the ear of the city. The city doesn't have to pay attention to it, but they don't when you appear at city council either. But there is a conduit where an individual citizen in any part of this city can eventually, through the neighborhood association, get some sort of input to the city council.
Ross, I think you're making a very good point in a larger sense. There is not a good citizen participation process that is adequate for all of the communities in the city. This has been true ever since the creation of the city of Portland. There are elites, and the elites are certainly more powerful than those who are not part of those elites. The city, the neighborhood associations are one of the two routes for a citizen to directly address the city council. The neighborhood associations are one. The other is to go before council to give testimony at the beginning of a council meeting. How much that matters, I don't know.
Anyway, I hope we do need improved neighborhood organization. And doing away with them is sort of like saying I was doing away with them because we've given up on them. I think the neighborhoods need to be strengthened. And we need different kind of neighborhood organizations, perhaps. I'm remembering back in the day, Joe, you'll remember back in the day of the Corbett Twilliger Lair Hill Neighborhood Association. It mobilized people because it had representative of tenants and business owners and absentee landowners and resident homeowners.
Well, it was created, Ross, let me just, something you may not know. It was created in response to a police crackdown on the so-called hippies during that period.
Well, however it was created, it did create a representative structure, and those representative structures were able to organize, and they got that whole area downzoned from being high-rise extension of the downtown to becoming limited at three or four-story homes. So it's a great example, but it was an example of a different kind of representative structure of neighborhood associations. And it's amazing that it worked, because it represented a very diverse neighborhood of Lair Hill, Corbett Street, and Twilliger neighborhood down by John's Landing. Well, listen, thank you so much, and
well, thanks for the call.
I want to see you another time to talk about the strengthening of the neighborhoods and understand better this proposal. This is not finalized yet.
And let me be clear: the literature I was sent by it. By the city, does not exclude neighborhood associations at all. It makes reference to them and, in a sense, honors them. What is different, clearly, is the tendency to apparently disengage them from a power position.
Essentially cut them off from a conduit and the support of the city. That's true.
That's the argument. I am not.
I think I agree with that part. And the other part is that I agree that they need to stir it up, and we need some change in the way this is all done. Well, listen, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. I'm going to go now to we're going to take a lot of calls coming in. 2318187. April, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
This is an interesting show. I am having kind of a hard time believing how many strong emotions this stirs up when there are so many other important things in Portland.
Well, it is interesting in that respect, but go ahead.
Yes, I was on the Office of Neighborhood Involvement volunteer board for about 7 years, and I was also in my neighborhood association and became chair for about 7 years, and the same with my neighborhood coalition. And I will say the structure is broken, so I don't like the way that they are pushing things through without getting our feedback. However, I do agree that neighborhood associations don't work well. They are primarily driven by landowners, property owners. You know, boards may have a token one or two or even three renters, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we have a lot of say. I encountered an awful lot of that even when I was chair. I was a renter, but I lived in the same place for 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very committed to my neighborhood. I still live, I had to move, but I still live in the same neighborhood. And when I was on the Office of Neighborhood Involvement Board, I saw that not only was I the only renter there, but I was one of the only people who attended regularly who was not employed either by the city or from one of the neighborhood associations that were funded by the city. So I was the only disinterested party that attended regularly. So I wish that they had done this differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish this show was more discussing what exactly is happening and how we can guide the process, rather than getting stuck in the same old, same old. But I am really glad to see that there is change coming. I think there are a lot of people who both rent or are homeless who are a part of our neighborhood. So it is not a separate issue at all. Or even people who, you know, work in the neighborhood. I mean, now that prices have gone up so much, we can no longer afford to live in the neighborhood where we work. Maybe it's a neighborhood we're committed to or a neighborhood we've historically lived in, but we can't work there anymore, so we commute. But we still consider ourselves part of that neighborhood. So I do think there need to be processes so that people can be involved more. Immigrants, maybe, who aren't aware of what neighborhood they live in, but are trying to put down roots. I don't think neighborhood associations are necessarily the answer, so I welcome this process. I wish it was being done differently, and I really wish that this conversation was being used more constructively to actually examine that process and how we might be involved in that process.
I think that's a good criticism, and I feel a little guilty. I put this together in a great rush. I did not intend it to be a wide-ranging discussion of the kind that perhaps is necessary. This is an issue that needs a lot of attention.
Right,
and,
because
and I'm not able to give it that, and I can only apologize for that. But, you know, you're here, you're talking, and we'll do what we can in the time we have. I want to thank you for the call very much.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go to the next caller, 231-8187. Charlotte, you're on the air.
Yes, you know, before the end of the show, I would really like to hear the editorial that was written in the Bee, because there's been a real problem, I believe, with the discussion that had not was not actually read out loud, and that a lot of the discussion ended up going in peripheral ways, being triggered by one feeling or thought or another. And I would like to get it back down to what exactly is the policy that's being proposed and being discussed, and what are, you know, let's have a discussion about the policy itself. And I just also like to say that having been a volunteer at a neighborhood association, I want to be real clear to reinforce the fact that it is a way to legally have every single person that lives in, that is a renter or a property owner, even property owners that don't live there, and also every business person in that neighborhood is actually a part of each neighborhood organization if they participate.
Yeah.
And so it's a way to legally have an access point from anywhere in the city to have input so that people can go to their neighborhood organization on any issue. For example, Udaly said as one of her concerns that because of the disability of her child, that people with disabilities should have access. I have a disability. I could have brought up disability issues when I was there, but I happened to be very involved in land use issues, which include disabilities, or just about anything else. The bicycle transportation people were very active outside. Any kind of group can organize and come from outside the neighborhood organizations and influence and come into the neighborhood organizations. So the person who was head of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance actually came to me and told me about transportation issues that needed addressing to open up transportation to make it more multimodal at that time that I was involved. So that I got very involved in transportation stuff. The bicycle people had input, and no one was really had a strong input on pedestrians, so I did. So it's like,
okay,
they're open. They're, the neighborhood associations are a legal access point to be a conduit to the city. They're open to anyone in the neighborhood. And they can work together with others, and others can always come in. No one is being stopped from coming in to also try to influence.
Okay, listen.
That's true.
I'm going to let you go. I think I want to give our editor for the V a chance to talk about his editorial and
I also
and
wanted
I think
to make
we may
one,
have to close with that. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I also wanted to make a point from the previous caller.
Okay.
that the mechanism to improve neighborhood associations and make them more represented, all of that is actually part of the relationship with the city, and it's embedded in the bylaws. So the city can do something about that. If they feel that there's deficiencies or some of the neighborhood associations are not living up to their mandate, the city can do something about it.
But what is your complaint specifically with what's happening?
Well, as far as the editorial, if I were to read the whole thing, we'd probably run out of time now. But
I apologize.
But the essence of the editorial is, I think, its headline, which is Portland about to end its only direct connection to its own residents? As long as the neighborhood association system is the only way in which Portland is set up to get any kind of input from its citizens, if you're going to end that connection, you must propose an alternative that can be in place when you end the connection.
You're talking about a formal relationship.
Some sort of method by which the citizens have some input. If you simply cut off that conduit of the neighborhood associations instead of trying to improve them, you don't have anything to replace it in the current proposal.
Well, it almost seems like there's a sub rosa intention here to alter the structure of this system.
Well, it seems like you're doing away with it. I mean, what else is presented as an alternative in this whole method that's going on here to provide a direct conduit to the city from its residents?
Well, I have many, many pages of the original plan for this new organization, this bureau that is going to be put in place.
Yeah, the new office is called the Office of Community and Civic Life. That used to be the Office of Neighborhood Involvement.
Right, and I feel like the literature is very well intended, but I'm not understanding how exactly it replaces the traditional function of the neighborhood associations.
Well, there's no conduit proposed. I mean, there really should be one. If you're going to cut that cord, you got to have another cord in place so that there is some way in which the citizens have some direct way of being represented at the city level. So my editorial ended with the thought that if we're going to do that, maybe it's time then to actually do away with the councilor system and start doing what other cities do, which is to have people elected from districts so that there is some conduit from people in parts of the city to the city government.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're running out of time. I realize this is a topic that probably takes several days of discussion on the radio. I feel the reason I brought you on is because I feel that you have a legitimate concern. And I feel that I do not see in all of this excellent writing and argument being made how any change in the existing system would improve communication between citizens and their government.
Nothing's proposed. I don't know what they have in mind.
I don't see anything. I see a lot of the ritualized language, I have to say.
There's a lot
of urban studies, and it concerns me. And I'm not unfamiliar with it. And I do want to say that this is something I will periodically take up again and again. I'm sorry I don't know how to pronounce the councilwoman's name. But
well, I think you did.
You do. Udaly.
Yeah. And I was certainly open to getting it right. And a personal note to the person who felt that I couldn't be an editor without knowing how to pronounce it. Had I been running a radio station, I would have obviously had to know how to pronounce it.
Well, I don't.
But she never came to our neighborhood association, or I would have met her and would have known how to pronounce it.
Well,
and
yes.
I'm not sure that she has ever attended any of them, actually.
Hey, you know what? We're out of time. I want to thank you for visiting with us. We've been talking with the editor of The Bee. It's an interesting conversation. We got a lot of response, and I'm sure we're going to have to take up the topic in another context in the near future.
Thank you.
Account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to
understand at all. KBU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Unity, a night of feminist Latinx BDX hip hop, Tuesday, August 28th at 9 p.m. at the Dock for Lunch in Portland. Unity features artists Maria Advertencia Lirica from Oaxaca, Valentina Peralta from Chile, Portland's Kayla J, and DJ La Pausi. This event is also sponsored by Colectivo Ruda and Cup Hub Creative. Again, la mula no era arisca, pero la hicieron. That's Unity, a night of feminist Latinx BDX hip hop. Tuesday, August 28th at 9 p.m. at the Dog Fair Lounge, 830 E. Burnside Street in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under community events.
KBU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bound, Africans vs. African Americans movie screening and discussion, on Saturday, August 24th at 2 p.m. at the Central Library in Portland. The movie will be followed by a panel discussion about the Black diaspora. Again, that's Bound, Africans vs. African Americans movie screening and discussion, on Saturday, August 24th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Central Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community.